take a deep breath, take the higher road. That's what they always say, as if they know the way. They won't take it from me. But don't ever doubt yourself, it's life ain't just a dream. You make your own, so kick and scream. The people move alike with a never-ending force. You never had the chance, so what you waiting for? The day has come, my friend, cause this is war.
Whether it's providing first aid, removing people from life-threatening situations, tending to the sick, or speeding on scene to an emergency, a paramedic's daily duties are far from an easy feat. Although praised for their hard work and sacrifice to help others, paramedics and EMTs are prone to suffer in silence. And without the right tools available to help, we face a huge problem. In this next hour, we will be exploring the terrifying truth of the first responder crisis, the steady decline that is happening in the profession, and we also will be speaking with the owner of Granite Mountain Training, which is a nonprofit organization that offers EMT training and hosts American Heart Association classes in the Prescott, Arizona area. We are your hosts. I am Nurse Cammy.
And Nurse Emily.
And you are listening to Nurses Out Loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. Our show airs Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can listen live from americaoutloud.com/nursesoutloud via the media player, and you can also listen live on iHeartRadio. Before we get started, we want to encourage all of our listeners out there to send us any questions or comments that you may have. You can direct those questions or comments to any six of us nurses that host our show, and you can submit those by going directly to the americaoutloud.com/nursesoutloud and select the name of the nurse you'd like to direct the message to from the drop-down menu. We look forward to hearing from you.
All right. So this morning, I am actually going to practically hijack the show from Cammy. This is a topic that I am very passionate about, first responders. I've been a paramedic for about 12 years, and 10 of those years I worked in the 911 system. And so first responders and anything really that deals with first responders is something that's very dear and held to my heart. So this morning, I just want to thank Cammy for our intro. And so we're just going
to I'm kind of here to just direct Emily, so that you don't get off track. I know that you have lots of information to share with us. Being a paramedic for 10 years, I'm sure you have numerous stories and can recount, you know, so many different things that you've experienced. So
yeah,
when we get into it, I'm going to kind of direct you so that we stay on time, because I know that there's so much stuff to go over that it's going to be hard to fit it all into the first half of the show.
Yes, honestly, this show, I feel like we could probably talk about for like, I don't know, 10 weeks. And I could probably feel every single minute of that hour just talking about this, because I get so excited and worked up about it. So I just kind of want to put a couple things in perspective. So starting off, we are very lucky. We live in a first world country, right? So we have a lot of our medical care, you know, our medical system that we have, or at least previously in the past, I'm not so sure anymore, we are number one in the world, right? And we have a system in place for emergencies. So if you have a medical emergency or there's a traumatic incident that happens, you know, what do? We call 911, right? I mean, everybody knows that. You teach your kids that as soon as they're able to comprehend, don't just call 911 when something happens to your teddy bear. But like, if there's a true incident where mommy and daddy are in trouble or you're in trouble, you can use the phone, you know, mom's phone, you can call 911. And I mean, even nowadays, when cell phones first came out, this wasn't a feature, but it is now. Even if you don't have cell service connected to your phone, you can still call 911 on it. So, you know, I just want to talk about that for a minute. So anytime that you have something happen, you know, we have We have some big things that we see all the time: stroke, heart attack, asthma attack. If you have an anaphylactic reaction, which is a life-threatening reaction to maybe if you're allergic to bees, if you cut your finger off when you're cooking dinner, when you fall off a ladder, if you're putting up Christmas lights or changing a light bulb, maybe there's a house fire, there's a car accident, there's a plethora of different things that happen. There are these situations and thousands of other situations that can happen. And not every, every similar call or situation is the same. You can go on, 500 different heart attack patients, and every single one of them is going to be different, right? So what do we do? What if I told you that if you or one of your loved ones or one of your best friends has an incident that is traumatic and life-changing and terrifying, where you have no idea what to do, even if you have medical experience, but it's someone that's close to you and somebody that you love dearly. What if I were to tell you that you call 911 when somebody's in a life-threatening situation that you love? Maybe they were just in a car accident. Maybe you yourself were just in a car accident, right? And you're out in the middle of nowhere and you call 911 and nobody shows up. Not a single person comes to help you, or maybe not so drastic, but you're in the middle, you live in the middle of the city and something happens and it takes 45 minutes for an ambulance to show up when you're right in the hub of where everything's happening. What if I told you that that is the direction that we're heading if we do not fix or at least begin to recognize the crisis that we're in with our first responders? So before I get into all of the nitty gritty of what I've got today, I want to give just a tiniest little brief overview of the difference between EMTs and paramedics, because it plays a role in some of the things that we're seeing today. And we'll go deeper into this on one of our other episodes that we're going to have in the future, where we actually are going to talk with a first responder and we're going to have them outline what their day looks like for us. So I just want to go quickly, EMT and paramedic. So an EMT is basic life support, or BLS. A paramedic is advanced life support, or ALS. And the difference between these is exactly what it sounds like. Basic life support is nothing, you're not doing anything that's invasive to a patient. And invasive is going to be something where you're putting something into somebody's body, or you're doing things to them that you have to get pretty invasive, I guess. And advanced life support is the opposite, where you're doing advanced invasive procedures on these patients. That could be just giving specific medications. Some of those medications can actually kill somebody if they're not given appropriately. And then also it could be, things like intubating them, which is where we put a tube down their throat so that they can breathe because they're not able to breathe for themselves. So those are just a couple different examples of basic life support versus advanced life support. The schooling for that EMTs are about 3 months of schooling, 1 semester. Paramedics are anywhere from 2 to 3 semesters of schooling, and it could be anywhere from 12 to 18 months. So they're right behind nurses. And the difference, nurses have just a little extra knowledge when it comes to medications and disease processes. The paramedic obviously just lives in the emergency, like how do I save your life right now till I can get you to the doctor kind of thing. And so that's the difference between the paramedics and the RNs. And that's how it flows: EMT, paramedic, RN. Okay, so the problem that we're having these days is we are having a huge first responder shortage. I think everyone's pretty familiar with, the first responder shortage when it comes to police officers. Sorry about that. Had a moment. And that's actually now we're seeing that when it comes to the fire department and to private EMS as well. So we're seeing that across the board for first responders. Today, we're specifically going to be talking about private EMS because that's kind of the area that I am familiar with. And that is when we have our interview with Joe Auer later on, we're going to interview him about his experience in private EMS as well. So I'm going to just give you guys a couple situations that I'm familiar with in the city that I live in. It's a somewhat small community, so I'm sure that this isn't the case for every community that's out there. This is just the one that I'm familiar with. But I will say that this is something that is affecting the entire nation. So even though my numbers may be a little bit different from the numbers that you have in the community that you live in, just know that you could just be living in a community that has a lot of first responders that are very passionate about protecting their community. And not that our first responders here aren't, we're just not able to protect them and keep them here for one reason or another. So I'm going to give you just some stuff that I know from when I worked in private EMS for as long as I did in the 911 system. So back then, we always had waves of having good staffing and having poor staffing. And that's pretty common. Everywhere that you work, you kind of fluctuate, right? Where you're fully staffed and then you're down a couple people. Well, the thing that makes it a little bit different is we're seeing this now for years. We're seeing a steady decline in the amount of people that are going to school to be EMTs and paramedics. Not just going to school, but then after they get out of school, we're seeing a steady decline. These people are not going to work for the ambulance company anymore. They're going and finding other jobs. Maybe they're teching in the hospital. Maybe they're using that just as a stepping stone. Like a lot of people are becoming paramedics and then immediately going to nursing school after and doing this bridge. A lot of them are going to PA school after. And they're using that as their intro into PA school as the emergency medicine aspect. So we're seeing them go to different areas. So we've always seen it go into waves. But I want to talk specifically about how is that affecting us in real life. So when I first started, it took me, I was on a 3-year waiting list before I was able to get into the position that I was in the 911 system in the community I live in. It was a very prestigious place to work. And I know there are a lot of other people who have similar experiences where it took years for them. And it was applying. I would apply every 6 months. That was my time frame. So I applied 5 times before I got hired. And it was just because they were fully staffed, right? There would be only maybe one paramedic or tops two paramedics that left a year. So it was very, very competitive. Even back then, the fire departments, they would have maybe 3 to 5 positions open and they would have 1,000 applicants for those positions. Now they have 15 positions open and they maybe have 30 to 50 applicants for those positions. And not everybody that applies is qualified for that, for those jobs. So when I first started, we would have about approximately 14 ambulances that would run in 4 cities. Well, actually, that's why it was actually 6 cities that we run, because we have a pretty big operating area, which is called the CON. And so we would have about, 14 ambulances that operated. And this was years ago. So nowadays, they've actually, the requirement for that, since our population has increased, has gone up pretty significantly. So we should be having anywhere, I'm going to say probably around 18 ambulances now for the same area versus the 14 that we had before. And these are all just ballpark numbers. I'm not going to say that these are, hard line numbers, just because, it's a fluctuating thing. And I don't want anyone to take any of this, super, super seriously, because these are all just approximate numbers. Anyway, so nowadays, where we're at after this steady decline over these years, is it used to be, before we would have one truck down. And that would be a big deal for the area. We would kind of all panic on those days. We would have one truck down because that would increase the workload on everybody else. And keep in mind, our first responders, police officers are a little bit different because they have to be, very alert all the time. And honestly, we should all be extremely alert all the time because we're dealing with people's lives. But we work anywhere from 8 to 24-hour shifts with the normality of it. Most of us work 24-hour shifts. So most first responders, at least for police officers and private EMS, we all work 24-hour shifts, or at least in the community that I am, we do. There are some other communities that are busier systems work 12-hour shifts, but a lot of them are having to transition to 24-hour shifts now, even if it's not safe for how busy they are, because they're not able to fill those 12-hour shifts. So they're being forced, regardless of the busyness, to revert back to 24-hour shifts. And that's creating these stand-up 24s where these paramedics and EMTs are doing literally that. They are up for 24 hours in a day, and they do not sleep at all during that time. They are just working straight for 24 hours, call after call after call, because there aren't enough ambulances on the road. So I want to break that down to really put that into perspective. So say we were supposed to have, we're just going to estimate ballpark, 18 ambulances now, and say we operate anywhere from 6 to 8 ambulances a day. That's 10 or more ambulances down that we're supposed to, than, you know, where we're supposed to be. So if there is a call that kicks out, right? So say I have 6 ambulances, and there's usually always a call going on all the time. A call goes out, so now I only have 5 ambulances for these 6 counts. So let's say another call goes out, and now I have that call is maybe 45 minutes from where the closest ambulance is, because I don't have a fully staffed operation anymore. Now it's going to prolong our response times to these certain situations. That leads us for our busy days, which is actually this season now, when we're talking about winter and when we have all of these respiratory issues that happen, especially where I live, when the snow starts, that also increases our traumatic accidents as well. So once I get all of these ambulances, what if all of these ambulances are on a call? And I'm going to tell you right now that that happens on a daily basis, where I have 6 calls. Even when we were fully staffed with 18 ambulances, we would still get 18 calls all at one time or within a couple minutes of each other. And every ambulance would be, you know, out of service, or not even necessarily out of service, but they would be on calls right now doing their job. So then say we're taking away at least 10 of those ambulances, and I only have 8 left or 6 left, and all of those are on 911 calls. What happens when you call 911 because something happened to your kiddo? What happens if they fell off the bunk bed and they hit their head on the ground and now they're unconscious, or maybe even having a seizure for that matter, and all of these other ambulances are on calls? What is going to happen? You're either going to have an extremely delayed response time for that ambulance to come and be able to transport your family to the hospital, or you're not even going to get an ambulance at all, and you're better off taking, or, and with saying that, are you better off taking your kiddo to the hospital yourself? So I want to give a couple of different situations that I've been involved in to really put into perspective how scary it is, and that it's been happening right now. It's currently happening, where there are not enough ambulances to transport. And I'm going to use kids as an example, because I feel that we are always, our hearts are always, you know, these are innocents, right? We're supposed to be protecting them and taking care of them. So I feel that it really puts things into a little bit more of a perspective. So for example, we had a pediatric code, and it was from a drowning. And this specific situation, it was a drowning in a bathtub, and our response time was delayed up to 50 minutes. So we had a response time of up to 50 minutes. Now, all of the ambulances were currently on calls right now. So there is really nobody's at fault for this. It's not like any of the paramedics or EMTs weren't doing their job. They were actually doing their job. They were working their tails off, and there just weren't any ambulances that were available at that time because of that. So this situation, there was a pediatric code, which means that the baby's heart had stopped and it was no longer beating because of the drowning and the lack of oxygen that the baby had to the brain for so long and to the rest of the body made that baby's heart stop. Because of that, the fire department got on scene, and they were very, you know, frequently asking, what is the ETA, which is the estimated time of arrival for the ambulance? They kept asking, and the time kept changing. At first, it was only 10 minutes, and then it eventually went to, okay, well, they're like 25 minutes out. And so at that time, the fire department actually decided that they were going to transport themselves. They were going to transport this baby themselves. Which I'm going to say, number one, is against the law, because they don't have the proper insurance or authorization from the state to transport that baby. But at that point in time, what do you do? Do you decide that you're going to stay there and wait for an unknown amount of time before this ambulance arrives on scene to transport, you know, and I don't want to say dead baby, because, you know, anything is possible when we were doing resuscitative efforts. But if they would have prolonged that 45-minute time, would that have created a less viable child? So they decided that they were going to transport that baby to the hospital. Keep that in mind. They don't have gurneys in the fire trucks. The fire trucks are not sanitized or sterilized the way that the back of the ambulances are. They don't have things set up, like, for example, in the back of the ambulance, we have certain things like suction containers on the wall that are easy to get to. Our medications are easy to get to. Everything is set up so that it is a very, very quick process and we can get to things very, very quickly. And they don't have that set up in the fire truck because they're not supposed to transport patients there. But they made that decision anyways. And I, you know, there's a lot of people who look negatively upon that, and that's a question for yourself. If you were put in that situation, would you want your child transported by the fire department, or would you want them to be transported 45 minutes later than they should have been transported over to the hospital? So that's just one experience. There are hundreds and hundreds of experiences. Some patients aren't in critical life-threatening situations, but there are many, many patients that are, where time is of the essence. And we know that as EMTs and paramedics, we see it all the time. If we're not able to do these things in a quick and efficient way where there's safety for everybody involved, our patients suffer for it. And so is that right for the fire department to have done that? I'm not going to voice my opinion because the show is for everybody to think for themselves and to believe their own truths. But that is an example of what direction we're heading to if we don't recognize this first responder crisis and we don't react to it. We talk about the RN shortages and the doctor shortages all the time. Everybody knows about that. But is that affecting our first responder crisis that we're having now and our first responder shortage? And what is that going to look like down the road? Imagine if we, you know, like on Nurse April's show where she's talking about these mass casualty incidents, right? That I believe that was her show that she just aired last week. And imagine if we come into this situation, we're already down at least, you know, from my perspective, 10 ambulances here. And imagine if we have a mass casualty incident and we already can't even cover our normal 911 calls that are for strokes, heart attacks, you know, maybe a pediatric code. Or whatever else it may be, we can't even cover those calls. How are we going to handle a mass casualty incident? Oh my gosh, I can just imagine the chaos that would ensue when we don't have those, our protocols. The protocols are there and they're in place. But if you don't have anybody to work those protocols, you don't have any manpower. Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine what is going to ensue when that happens. So now, for just the last couple minutes of our first half, I just want to talk about our possibilities of why this shortage is happening. So one of the big things I just talked about is the RN shortage. And that's something that I think, you know, is a possibility of taking away some of our first responders from our 911 system is because they're getting offered, you know, more pay, better working conditions. You don't have to be in an ambulance for 24 hours and you don't have to have call after call after call. Before, we wouldn't have back-to-back calls like that. We would maybe get, I don't know, 6 to 8 calls in a shift, and they would be, sometimes you would get back-to-back, but for the most part, they would be spread out. Now, as soon as you clear the hospital, you're immediately getting another call because that 911 call is waiting for you. And it's the constant thing for these people on these 24-hour shifts. It's one thing if you work, you know, 10, 24-hour shifts a month and you get one stand-up 24. No big deal, right? But if you're working stand-up 24s for 10 days out of the month, your body is going to be completely wrecked from that. So are those poor working conditions that we have right now, is that leading these paramedics and EMTs to leave the field and go, you know, into other fields, whether it's, you know, being attacked in the hospital or honestly even just leaving the field altogether, maybe even just working in a doctor's office, which you don't get to utilize any of your skills, your critical emergency skills that you have, but at least you get to go home every night to your family and you're not completely exhausted the next time that you see them. You get to eat dinner with them and sleep in your own bed. So is that something where these, because what's happening right now is we're seeing, you know, these hospitals, at least in the area that I work in the two hospitals that we have up here, they actually are training these paramedics to be mini RNs. Because of their shortage, they're offering sign-on bonuses and they're offering better wages to these paramedics, and they're taking them off of the trucks, they're putting them in the hospital in a controlled environment so you don't have as much chaos. You're working a 12-hour shift, you probably hopefully get to go home at least close to being on time versus a lot of the mandatory holdovers that we have as a first responder because of the shortage. And you get to work in there and you get to give your medications that you would give on the ambulance. You get to do pretty much all the same things you get to do on the ambulance in the hospital, but it's in a nicer setting, right? So are these paramedics leaving for those mini RN positions? Is it because of the poor working conditions? Is it because of the burnout rate? Because you have to think, if I'm getting back-to-back calls for 24 hours a day, for 10 days out of the month, I'm going to get burnt out really, really quick, which is a huge problem and leads to a lot of behavioral, a lot of PTSD for our first responders. Is it the pay? And that's something that's pretty dear to my heart because being a first responder, I would have to work overtime just to support my family. That was a part of my daily week, is working, at least one overtime shift so that I can support my family. And I want to throw some numbers out there because I don't think people realize how bad it is. So just the other day, I was scoping out my area because it's been a little while since I worked 911. And I have these are I did one. So I went to a flight company. I went to the private EMS, and then I went to a fire department here. And it was a more rural fire department. It wasn't one of the big ones, but still. And we have pay ranges between $13.50 an hour to $22.50 an hour. So I have three of them here. I have $13.50, I have $19, and I have $22.50. These are what our first responders are making. Our people that are coming to your home, they're complete strangers, and they're giving you their life. They're giving you everything that they have to try and help you and to save you or your family or your child. And they're making this wage. I mean, that's not even that's laughable. Imagine if an RN in that controlled environment where they have all kinds of extra help, and they're complaining about, their $40 an hour, which I'm not gonna lie, we all work our tails off. But these people are doing this for that amount of wage because it's what they love to do. They're not doing it because they're making a ton of money. That's never been the case for any of these people. They're doing it because they love to help people, because to see the satisfaction of saving somebody's life or to get that letter in the mail, which really never, I mean, that happens maybe a handful of times in a career. That's what they're doing it for.
Well, thank you so much for the insight, Emily. I feel like you've unwrapped a lot, and it's eye-opening and shocking and honestly terrifying, some of the things that you've talked about, from the calls that you've taken to the staffing issues that they have for the ambulances, but also just for these companies in general. And the last thing that you talked about was the pay. I can't even imagine getting paid $13.50 an hour and trying to survive and take care of myself, let alone kids and my family.
Yeah,
That
and
is just,
we actually
it's.
have some information about that we pulled up from the Bureau of Labor, and we're going to link that into the show as well so everyone can see the statistics of what first responders are being paid. So I just wanted to throw that out there too.
Yes, we'll definitely link that down there. And I feel like we could continue on this topic, and there's so many different avenues that we could take surrounding the crisis. But right now we have to go to break. And after the break, we will hear from Joe Au. He is the owner, director, and educator for Granite Mountain Training, which is a nonprofit organization located up in Prescott, Arizona. He is a paramedic himself, and his organization offers EMT training and American Heart Association classes for his community. You are listening to Nurses Out Loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
It's time, and this is
we know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep is infuriating. Your mind races, you toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's fast-paced digital age makes it tougher. You're not alone. Poor sleep affects over 70% of us. The CDC even labeled insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created REM Sleep to help you quickly fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake refreshed. Unlike other supplements that don't work, REM Sleep is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients, supporting all four stages of sleep using calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Over 1,000 reviews with an average star rating of over 4.4 proves it works. Take back your sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
People often ask me, Malcolm, how do we fight the corruption? Robert Frost has said it best. Freedom lies in being bold. Well, for six incredible years, bold is America Out Loud. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Whoa, wait, we wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses, and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
For 40 years, alarmists have been warning of a climate catastrophe, yet none of their dire predictions have come true. Temperatures have not soared, sea level rise has not been unusual, and extreme weather events have not increased in either frequency or intensity. In short, there is no climate emergency. For 15 years, the International Climate Science Coalition has led the call for climate realism and a Made in America climate plan. A plan based on real science that responds to the real-world needs of Americans, supports economic growth, and strengthens our essential infrastructure. A plan that protects the environment and ensures that Americans can enjoy the blessings of clean air, clean land, and clean water for generations to come. It's time to put ideology and pseudoscience aside. It's time for a sensible climate plan. For more information or to donate, visit our website, icsc-climate.com.
It's time, and this is war.
We've got Joseph Au here today, and he's going to just answer some questions on the topic that we've been talking about. Thanks so much for joining us today, Joe.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So, Joe, I just want to first start off with just a little bit about your background. Can you tell everyone how long you've worked in EMS or 911 system specifically?
Yeah, real quick about me. So I've been in the EMS 911 system for about 12 years now. Most of that was full-time. I was able to see different agencies, different organizations, how they operate. Started off in Hawaii, which is Honolulu, Hawaii, on Oahu. And they have a city agency, started there. Got my education through some local community colleges. Now I'm over here in Arizona. Worked for some corporate companies. Got a feel for that. Been involved with some colleges and now a nonprofit as well as another corporate company. So some experience going on there.
How many years is that, Joe? 911?
That's 12 years of experience now.
Awesome. Awesome. And that was a mixture of EMT and paramedic, right?
Right. EMT was about 3 years and paramedic was the rest.
Yeah. And that we kind of described that earlier in the first half of the show, just kind of the differences of EMT and paramedic. So that's kind of why I wanted to mention it for everybody here. So, you know, this whole segment that we're talking about today, we're talking about the shortage that we're seeing in first responders. And so, you know, with this nonprofit organization that you've created, I'm just kind of curious, and I know that you're still working, you know, on top of teaching for this nonprofit, you're still working, you know, on the ambulance and the 911 system, right?
For sure. It's always a strenuous job. They describe it as, you know, one of the stressful jobs and burnout rates are high. But it really doesn't change whether you're on it for a day, a week, or a day a month. At the end of it, I really give props to anyone who's been doing it a long time. It adds up. One day a month is enough at some point.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. So would you say that, you know, you kind of have to be cut out for it, right? You say that you kind of have to be made to be able to do this job or to have that strong personality to make it. What would you say about that?
You do. Everybody has to have some kind of passion for it. Somebody has to not be born for it, but I like to say that people are made for it. So there's enough trauma going on in our world, especially as of late. And what we should be seeing with all this trauma and COVID and the world getting worse is that it actually makes more people that care and more people that want to be first responders. And that I feel like that used to be the case. It certainly was the case with me where you have some kind of traumatic childhood or some kind of traumatic event. And that spins you into this whirlwind of, man, I wasn't good enough, and now I want to be a paramedic or I want to be a RN or whatever it is. But we're not seeing that as much, and it probably has to do with culture change.
Yeah, I think that definitely could have a lot to do with it. I think that the direction that we're going as a society, at least in the U.S., generally is kind of an interesting one with the social media craze that we see right now. And this next generation that we're seeing, it doesn't seem like they have that same passion. And I know, you know, you just mentioned that you were in that situation where something happened and it makes you want to jump in and be part of this first responder or helping others. I feel like that's exactly what happened in 9/11. We had a huge spike, at least with firefighters or with people wanting to be firefighters. And I can say, at least, you know, my experience in this is 5-10 years ago when I was trying to get hired for, you know, these positions as a paramedic, it took me a few years to get the job that I wanted. I remember when I applied for, you know, where you and I met, working for that private ambulance company, it took me 3 years to get hired on by them. And I remember there used to be hundreds of applicants for one single position, either in private EMS or even for the fire department. There'd be like 5-10 positions open at the fire department, and there would be 1,000 applicants. So that kind of brings me to my next question I have for you. During your, you know, you've talked about you've been in this for 13 years. During your experience and that time, have you ever seen a shortage this bad that we have today? Or for as long as we've had it?
Nope, I haven't. Like you said, when I got hired too for the city agency, it was a very competitive process. I mean, I was sweating bullets trying to get in. There was a large interview process. You had to write an essay. You know, there was an essay that you had to write to get in, and they filtered and picked who they wanted, really. And it was a lot of organizations were closed in that way. You had to know someone, or they really did have to like who you are to get hired. And now it seems everything definitely has changed. We haven't seen anything this short in years last for this long.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, which it's very interesting. So what would you say, you know, how it is for you now? If you could, you know, pinpoint a couple differences compared to, say, you know, when you and I started working together, which was, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, I would say now, what would you say some differences that you're seeing now that you're out there in the field? What's changed?
Yeah, the job is just no longer revered like it was. In the past, it was a big honor. You know, you'd step in, be a paramedic. For one, the public would probably respect you a little more than nowadays. And the amount of self-respect would be there too. You had a lot of pride. This whole job was filled with pride. And even if you didn't get paid that much, the pride was almost enough to keep going. If not 100% of the time, it was just pride that pushed you through it. And to be able to say that you're a paramedic and making a difference out there, that was a big thing. But now everything's changed. And people, for one, anybody in uniform, in fact, police, definitely, mm-hmm. law enforcement, a fire department, and a corporate, definitely a corporate type of paramedic.
Yeah.
Wearing that uniform, you're not respected anymore.
Yeah, I definitely would have to agree with you there. Before, you know, there were, we know, because earlier we've talked about, you know, the pay range for these private ambulance companies and how they're a lot less than what people would expect. Even the fire department pay ranges are not as much as they should be for the work that they're doing and the stressors that they're putting on their body. So would you say, Joe, that, or let me ask you this, what are there any specific conditions, like when you're out there and you're talking to people, you know, you're one of those that have stuck with it this whole time. So you definitely, you have the passion for it. That's why you're still here. We know it's not for the money because, you know, there's a million other jobs that we could be doing right now or that you could be doing and making a lot more money. Are you hearing anything from other people that are coming in, experiencing it for a few months and then leaving right after? Are they saying anything of why they are leaving?
Yeah, most of it nowadays comes down to money. And if you don't have something to supplement like pride or status, then yeah, they're not going to stay. What I keep seeing is a lot about the cultural change. So you got some that come in and maybe they're middle class or different socioeconomical classes, but it's usually the ones that stick around don't have a choice. They're lower socioeconomical class. They scraped by just to get to where they are.
The education.
Right. And they have to pay rent, which is now inflated, and pay for their children and their car and all this stuff. And they get backed into a corner, definitely by a lot of different companies as well. And they're stuck. Not necessarily because they want to do the job, but because they have to, just another job. And they'll go to any other job at that point if times get hard. Culture's changed. And people, they're smart. I don't say they're smarter, but they're different. People, the students that I see nowadays and the people that get into this job are struggling more than anybody I've ever seen. So you got to give them due credit for that. It's a different thing that we didn't have to grow up in.
Yeah.
For me, you know, for instance, growing up, it was like, well, you know, I spent a lot of time with my mom in a hair salon and I was, you know, and she cooked for me. And it was kind of like the baby boomer, raised by baby boomer thing. I went to Blockbuster, you know,
yeah.
I didn't have to deal with COVID. You know, the most I had to deal with for world events was maybe 9/11. And even that was isolated because I was living on an island. So now it's like, well, what did these guys have to deal with? COVID for one, and this huge generational change of generational change as in including our leaders, whatever else is going on, but they are certainly on their own struggling more than any other generation. And stats show, you know, supposedly this generation is also the most alone, most depressed. And I see it. I mean, every student, we don't lose students now because they don't want to be an EMT. We lose them because of life events. They come in, they have a fire, a passion. Man, I got to do this. I want to do it. I want to take care of people. I want to help. Next thing you know, life gets hard and that's it. That's why we lose them.
Yeah. Wow. No, that's pretty profound thinking about that, because you're right. You know, just our last episode, we were talking about, why are we seeing such an increase in all of these things, you know, with these young people. And that's truly who is coming into this career. You know, you and I, we've been into this career for at least a decade, you know, and maybe even if there is another decade moving forward for you, you're going to eventually become into the close. You know, I mean, I know you're transitioning now into more of an instructor role, and you have been for the past few years with Granite Mountain Training. So this generation that we have right now, they're the ones that are going to be taking care of these people when you call 911. And if they're not taken care of by their employers, then who's going to be here at the end of the day? Is it just the ones that have to be here? And what kind of care are you going to be getting if that person is forced to be here just because they are that, you know, lower class like you were talking about? Wow, that's pretty interesting to think about. So would you say, you know, you talked about a lot of it is due to money. Would you say that if we increased rates for these first responders that they would stay? Or do you think it's a little bit more than that?
It eventually comes down to finances. It does for everyone. You know, I'd be silly to say that it doesn't. you always say, well, it's not about the money. I mean, it is always about the money in some manner, because everybody has to buy groceries. Everybody has to feed their family. So, you know, a lot of this debt, and when you break this down, and companies too, they'll look at it for sure. It's no different from the overall perspective of, well, if somebody on average is paying $1,000 for rent and spending an average also of $500 a month for groceries of just one person living by themselves, and I pay them $2,000 a month, they will never have enough money to quit from my job that I offer them, or to move on to better things, or to afford better education. So it does come down to the money. It puts people into corners, puts people in a different tax bracket, which takes away benefits, resources in that matter. It's, you know, you have somebody who's not making any money, they're more eligible for education than someone who is.
Yeah. And I would say that the amount that you're giving is pretty modest for, at least in the community that we live in, for rent and food, you know, and all of the other bills that you're going to be expected to pay, all of your utilities. I would say that's modest because of the influx that we're seeing in people moving here. So that's a great point. And honestly, it's a pretty devastating point, because we're failing these younger generations. We're putting emphasis on things that it is not going to create a better life for them. We're making it more difficult. Okay, Joe. So we kind of chatted a little bit about what we talked about in the first session, in the first half of the show. So I kind of want to bring up some positivity now that we've talked about a little bit of negativity here. I want to talk about the nonprofit that you have started. I want to kind of hear about what your mission is. And the reason that you started this, it goes right along with the topic that we have today.
Right. Yeah. Light and Things, we started the nonprofit because there's nothing available in our immediate community, but it's definitely a nice model that a lot of other places can look at. You know, imagine you're sitting there in your small community and think about your own community, wherever you live. Who's providing training for first responders? If they're cut out, if something happens to them, then where are the first responders going to come from? And with our small community up here in Prescott, it's going, well, we have Yavapai College. Great. Something happens to them, we don't have first responders. And that did happen because of COVID. They cut programs. And as you experienced, we were on the road and we felt alone. We'd be the only ambulance available for miles. So, you know, we started the nonprofit to solve that, for one, to get more first responders on board, but to change the culture, because some educational institutions are better than others, but some are not. Some don't want to change. Some want to stay with the banking method of education, as in, you know, sit in the seat. I tell you something, I lecture to you, and you receive the information, no questions asked. Deposit it and accept it. But that's not the culture we're dealing with now. The culture we're dealing with now is, if they don't like something, they'll just not do it.
Yeah.
So we either take care of these guys and we see them later on to take care of us when we're 80 years old, or we block them out and we refuse to nurture them, and because we think that, you know, hey, let's just say for me, the baby boomer generation, they didn't treat us well, or, you know, we had it hard and this is how our parents did it, so we have to do it that way too. And that's not the culture now. And you either get on board with it and change, or you resist, and then next thing you know, you're going to wake up and you're the geriatric patient in the seat thinking, man, I should have nurtured these guys a little bit more. So, because they're going to do what they want to do, and they'll go on and they're smart and they're going to go on to other jobs. And they know it's the question asking generation. They're going to say, well, why should I do it this way? And we should accept it. Go, you know what? You're right.
Yeah.
Why are we doing it that way? If we have a good reason, great. But if we don't, we should think about why. And that this whole program and nonprofit was designed to cater to that culture. It's, we look at each individual, we look at their, who they are, what they care about, what they want to connect to and attach to, and we provide them with that outlet. It's amazing and definitely inspiring. When you have someone who's a younger student, let's say, and now is that next generation, all you have to do is what I've experienced with students. All you have to do, and it's real simple, is you inspire them, you motivate them, you nurture them, and you give them freedom and flexibility to self-regulate. And they far exceed any expectation than any other student put in a different situation with more restrictions.
Yeah, and I'd have to say that, you know, as EMTs, this is just the beginning step, right, in the medical field. Usually they come to us, and it's very rare that we have an EMT student that has prior medical experience. Yeah, sure, maybe we get someone that's tech'd at the hospital or is a CNA. But when they come to us, this is where we're building the foundation, right? The original foundation. And so however that foundation is given to them, that's who they end up becoming, you know, moving forward. So I kind of want to ask you, because I think that is wonderful what you're talking about. And I want you to talk about the flipped classroom. You kind of did already a little bit in nurturing them and being able to get their thoughts. But I love this idea because it's not the traditional, like you're talking about, PowerPoint, right? We're not going through, clicking through PowerPoint after PowerPoint after PowerPoint, and everyone's falling asleep, and then they're going home to study the information. The flipped classroom is actually where you're bringing them into the conversation, and it's a conversation just like you and I are having now, right? It's a conversation with some references to other things, and then that conversation leads on to hands-on training, right? So we're not actually just doing the whole, this is what the equipment looks like on a picture on a PowerPoint, but they're actually getting the equipment out, right? And they're actually doing all of these things real time so that when they get out into the field, not only is training time less for them out in the field, but they also are already comfortable with these things.
Heck yeah. This is, people can relate to this, you know, this is the age of fidget spinners, and you gotta put something in these kids' hands. You gotta put some, and I'm the same way, honestly. I don't excuse myself from not being able to pay attention to PowerPoints. It's also an association. You're cramming these kids through school. They're asking, why am I sitting at this desk in this design that's not attentive to me, and I gotta listen to this one instructor and do these assignments? And then they go into higher level education, and they're gonna associate those same tables with that same environment. And the moment you put up the PowerPoint, just like their high school teachers, or whatever was going on, they're going to click that remote off and shut off the brain. So put something in their hands, flip the classroom, and it's been around. It's not new. It depends on what stat you're looking at. I know for us, there's at least a 17% to 27% increase in success rates for doing a flipped classroom. And it just means they get a little more control, a little more power. They come in, put something in their hands. You know, you're going to talk about something, discuss something, put that piece of equipment in their hands to look at, to pass around. We go as far as over here to pass around an odor or a scent that's simulated for them to
give an example smell of what those odors, right, are, so that people can understand.
Well, in the EMS world, it gets interesting. We have decaying flesh, we have burnt flesh, vomit, we have urine, feces.
So all the things that the EMT or paramedic is going to see on a somewhat, sometimes daily basis. Maybe the burnt flesh is more on a monthly to annual basis.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's the whole package, but you can't argue with that and to say that it doesn't keep people awake and attentive. So something, you know, you got to go to the extreme, and it's not just me saying it, just attending other instructional update courses and the science is there. The educators are there. They're just the new educators that are being trained. But, you know, universities, they're changing the way they teach their teachers and how they're getting those degrees. And a lot of it goes into pretty much saying, to a certain extent, if you got to teach students in memes and fidget spinners, then you do it.
Yeah. Whatever's going to bring success in the classroom for these students. I agree. All right, Joe. So I'm going to ask you one more question, and I want you to answer wherever your heart's at. What do you think, if there is anything that we can do to increase our first responders out here on the field? I know we talked about pay already, but, you know, what can we do? What can a community do? You know, all these listeners, what can we do to help with our first responder crisis that we're having right now?
Right. We can only do so much as far as the finances, unfortunately. You know, that's up to the organizations, and each one has their budget to work with. And I get it. They got to pay for gas and other their own operations. But for us, this generation and everyone coming in, everyone that's out there, it really does come back down. It sounds silly, but sounds like a Disney movie, but it's just love. It comes back down to love, you know, and it's not just like, well, pat on the back, thank you for your service that we hear all the time. It's gotta be, it's genuine. It's like, hey, write a letter in, you know, write a letter in, call out a first responder by name, recognize him on social media. But we have social media now and it's awesome. It's such a great outlet if you use it in the right way. And say you have an encounter with someone out there and it's a paramedic or whoever, throw it out on social media, name them and just let them know so that they can build out that, they can understand that pride is there and they can be revered for it. It keeps them there. That's the least that we can do.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think that just, you know, bringing this to a close a little bit, but before we end, I would have to say, you know, when you and I were younger, we were, you know, you just described a little bit about it, how it was with your mom, you know, spending time with her when you were younger. And I think that, you know, our generations previously, there was a lot more family community. So we got that love from home, right? And you mentioned this is, you know, the generation that is the most alone. So maybe they're not getting that love that we got from home. They're not getting that because both parents are working to be able to support their families in this time of increased inflation. And just, that's just the direction we're moving. And it's sad that we have to come to the workplace to get that acceptance and to get that, you know, love. But you're right. Honestly, that would make a huge difference when you feel appreciated and you feel like what you're doing is really making a difference for your community. That changes everything.
Thank you all for listening to today's show. Just to remind you all, there are other amazing shows and content located on the America Out Loud website. So feel free to check that out. Tomorrow you have Nurse Kimberly on air. So don't forget to set your alarms. Her show airs at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You won't want to miss it. This is Nurse Cammie.
And this is Nurse Emily.
And you're listening to Nurses Out Loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. We are in a war for the truth, shining our light in the darkness.
It's time and day.